morning, everybody. My name is Erica Kenny, and I'm presenting on behalf of my colleagues at the Harvard School of Public Health and Boston Public Schools. And we're moving from school breakfast to drinking enough water during school. I have no financial relationships with commercial interest to disclose, and just wanted to give a brief acknowledgement to our funders at the CDC and an anonymous grant. So for some background, as we all know, safe, clean drinking water is a hallmark of public health, really. And, you know, low water intake is associated with reduced cognitive functioning, headaches, and other subjective feelings of poor health. So we often think about extreme dehydration, you know, as being a very serious problem, but a very rare problem. But even when it's not severe dehydration, you can have some poor effects on well-being. We also know that replacing sugary drinks with water can reduce obesity risk and potentially facilitate weight loss. So promoting water should be a really strong goal of nutrition efforts in schools, especially because water consumption among U.S. children and adolescents is quite low. And so increasing youth water consumption could really address several public health problems simultaneously, potentially. Schools are a natural partner for trying to increase water consumption among youth. The Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010 actually regulates that schools that participate in the National School Lunch Program must provide access to free drinking water during lunch. And we know that a lot of state and local plumbing codes for school require that schools have minimum water access. However, there are some problems, actually, with school water consumption. There are several studies indicating that students have pretty low perceptions of the tap water in schools, perceiving it as unsafe or dirty or doesn't taste well, even in schools where we know that the tap water is perfectly safe and, you know, if you do a blind taste test, you're going to end up with no difference between bottled or tap water. But the good thing is that school-based water promotion efforts thus far have had several successes. So there was a randomized control trial in Germany where they installed water fountains throughout the school just to sort of immediately increase access. And they actually found reduced prevalence of obesity at their follow-up time point. There has also been some work about distributing refillable water bottles in schools or installing bottle fillers and found increased self-reported consumption of water in middle schools. This project grew out of a partnership with the Boston Public Schools, which is a fairly large urban district in Boston, Massachusetts, and serves about 75% of the children in Boston. Their health and wellness departments, their operations departments, and their food and nutrition services departments all have been working together, actually, to improve drinking water access. And we've been collaborating with them to evaluate some of their water promotion strategies since spring 2011. We started with our OSNAP trial, out of school nutrition and physical activity trial, which looked at increasing water access in Boston after school programs. We've also done a small pilot study to evaluate putting water dispensers in the lunch lines. We also did, in last spring, a survey of every single Boston public school building to assess drinking water access and quality, and we are continuing to do cost analyses of water infrastructure changes with them. This project was something to see, given if you have some water access, you have some baseline water fountains available, how can we actually get kids to drink a little bit more than they're already drinking? So it was to develop by BPS and evaluate by Harvard School Public Health Prevention Research Center an intervention to increase student water consumption during lunch. We called it Grab a Cup, Fill It Up, and the idea was to improve access and the appeal of drinking water, to target those two things. So the question was, in school environments without new infrastructure or refillable water bottles that have low resources and can't just go and buy a whole bunch of new bottle fillers or something else that might increase access, how can you do it, increase access to drinking water and improve its appeal using a low-cost approach and something that requires minimal staff time to implement so that it's actually sustainable? We used an approach informed by behavioral economics to make water convenient, attractive, and normative. So the intervention, we targeted attractiveness with these just gorgeous posters. that were posted near the water dispensers in intervention schools to try and promote water. And these were tested with BPS students beforehand for, you know, a variety of reading levels and to be appealing for a lot of age groups. For convenience, to increase access to free drinking water, we put cup holders next to the cafeteria water sources, and we stocked them with 5-ounce recyclable translucent plastic cups. And this picture over here is actually a picture of this ended up looking like as it was implemented in one of our intervention schools. So before that, you just had this like big brick wall and these sad water fountains, and now you have a little bit more jazz around your water fountains there. To evaluate it, we used a matched pair cluster randomized controlled trial of 10 schools, which our power calculations indicated was adequate to find an effect size. The eligibility for this project, they had to have plumbed water access in the cafeteria, which, as a side note, is actually not true in a lot of Boston public schools. A large percentage of them do not have any plumbed water access in the cafeteria, so our eligibility was a little bit small. We observed water consumption directly for one school week from Monday through Friday at baseline and at follow-up 3 weeks later. The primary outcomes were the average ounces of water consumed per lunch period, and the secondary outcomes were the proportion of students who chose to drink water and the proportions of students who had sugary beverages or milk at the lunch table. So to look at water intake, what we did was, during each lunch period, we had a little fleet of research assistants permeating the cafeteria, and they counted the number of students who took the free water and how they got it, whether they got it from a cup or a bottle or directly from the fountain. We also counted the number of students present in each lunch period for our denominator. Then we also had them scan the lunchroom to look at a sample of lunch tables, and this on average got about 65% of the lunchroom, and we had them record every single beverage that each student had at his or her spot, so we could estimate the prevalence of consuming sugary beverages, juice, milk, water, or other beverages, or no beverages at lunch. To then get to the volume of water taken per student, we did the following. If they took it from a plumbed fixture, we timed how long the student drew the water from the fixture and then back calculated the ounces drawn using an estimate of the fixture's flow rate. It was taken from a cooler because a couple of the cafeterias had an extra bottled water cooler in there. We weighed the cooler before and after each period and then divided by the number of students who took water, so we got the average. Then we estimated the proportion of water taken that was consumed, and we estimated that if they drank directly from a fountain stream, they got about 32%, and if it was from a cup or bottle, they got 96%. And as you can see, this young gentleman here is not getting a whole lot of water into his mouth from that fountain stream. So to estimate the proportion consumed, we had an estimate of this actually from a 1978 study in the Applied Journal of Ergonomics that looked at the efficiency of a fountain stream. And they found in this very detailed set of experiments that adults could consume about 35% of the water on average that comes out of a fountain stream. And I encourage you to try this actually, except you can't try it with the fountain that's just outside of this room because there's no water coming out of it. But there are some fountains throughout the building, and you can kind of guess and see how much you're actually able to get in your mouth. To estimate the proportion consumed by children, which we thought might be a little bit different, we conducted a very small study among 20 elementary school-aged children in a Boston summer camp. And we did the same thing with calculating the flow rate, but we put a metal pan in the basin of the fountain so we could collect all the water that kind of didn't make it into their mouths. And then we calculated the water drawn and then subtracted the water left in the pan. So that's how we got this number. For the 96% of cups and bottles, we used some estimates from an after-school study that we had done where we had weighed everything to the nearest gram pre-post. So we had a pretty precise estimate there as well. To analyze this, we used multi-level linear regression models, estimating the difference in the change in average ounces of water consumed per student from baseline to follow-up between intervention and control schools, and this adjusted for clustering of repeated observation days and lunches within schools. Just to note, in case it is not totally clear, the analysis was the average consumption per lunch period. It was not of individual students, so this was a population-level estimate. At baseline, we had 10 schools, 47 observation days, 179 lunch periods, and about 1,600 instances of a student drinking water. At follow-up, it was roughly the same, but there were higher instances of students drinking water, and we used intention to treat analysis. A brief note on the characteristics of our participating schools. There were no significant differences between intervention and control schools, and there was a pretty even distribution between elementary, K through 8, high, and we served a pretty diverse population. As for changes in water consumption, the intervention was associated with almost a doubling of the proportion of students who drank water. So it went from 5.8% to 13.1%, and the adjusted change was 9.4 percentage points. This was highly significant. And the average ounces of cafeteria-provided water consumed per student per lunch period also significantly increased. And this looks a little small, but this we should remind you that this is across everybody in the cafeteria, so it's a population-level estimate. It's not the amount consumed per student, which we'll talk about next. But across everybody, this increased water consumption significantly by almost 0.6 ounces per lunch. We also saw some changes in the prevalence of other beverages. So there was a 3 percentage point decrease in the proportion of students who had sugary beverages at lunch. There was no change in milk, which is what we were hoping to see, that this wouldn't displace healthy beverages. And there was also a 3 percentage point reduction in the percentage of students with 100% juice, and no change with other beverages. In terms of cost and acceptability, most cafeteria staff reported that the intervention was easy and did not add undue burden to their regular tasks and was well received by students. We also had minimal costs that came out to less than a tenth of a cent per student per day when all was said and done. A key mechanism of this intervention was cups. We noted that 55% of the students in intervention schools used cups at follow-up compared to virtually nobody at baseline. And we also noted that consumption differed substantially according to whether a cup was used versus a student drinking from a fountain. So students, on average, drinking from fountains could only drink about 2.5 ounces, but when we had a 5-ounce cup, they drank 5 ounces. So we did a sort of secondary analysis where we looked at the association between using a cup and the amount of water consumed in intervention schools at follow-up just among the students who consumed water, and found that using a cup was associated with drinking over more than 3 ounces of extra water per lunch. To summarize the results, providing cups and promotional posters was associated with significant improvements in water consumption across the student population. The proportion of students drinking water during lunch nearly doubled, and the average ounces of water consumed across the student population more than doubled. The intervention was also very inexpensive and acceptable to most cafeteria staff, and it may have resulted in reductions in sugar-sweetened beverages and 100% juice at lunch, while having no impact on milk consumption. This study did not really evaluate the long-term sustainability of the intervention, so that is something we'd be looking ahead towards, as well as the long-term effects of the intervention. We're not sure of the generalizability of this, obviously, to other cafeteria environments and school districts. And we should note, too, that we recognize that the water consumption was still fairly low in the study across the population. So there definitely seems to need to be a way to address students' negative perceptions of tap water a little bit further. We did hear informally from and have heard throughout the district that a lot of students in Boston don't think that the water is safe and have a lot of theories about what is in their drinking water, and so there may need to be a more targeted intervention to address this. We also wanted to explore why so many students actually did not opt to drink anything at all during lunch. I didn't have this in the table, but at any given time, almost a third of the students in the cafeteria had nothing to drink, no sugary beverage, no water, no milk, no juice, nothing. And that kind of raised a little bit of concern about whether kids are actually getting dehydrated during their school day, which some evidence actually does suggest might be happening. Our implications, we have similar findings to other school-based water promotion interventions. So, you know, improving access and appeal to students does seem to work at increasing student water consumption. This is something we can, and Grab a Cup, Fill It Up demonstrates that access can be improved for minimal cost, even without investments in infrastructure or other more expensive changes. Another note, some of you may have these little 2-ounce cups that were distributed at the beginning. This is about the amount that you can get from a water fountain when you drink it. This is the default that we're giving kids in school cafeterias. So this is about how much water they can drink. And I would encourage you to fill it up, you know, and take a little sip and see how satisfying it is and whether that quenches your thirst. So we're really not giving kids very much water. And if we really want to improve water access, we need to consider other alternatives to fountains. Fountains are a good starting place, but this is not really a good way to be getting water to kids right now. And this is really frustrating, actually, I think, if you're like spending a lot of time trying to drink and this is all you can get. So we do need to shift the default if we want to help kids drink more water, and providing cups may be a good way to do that.